Let me be perfectly clear that in order to practice the Dhamma, it's not necessary for you to adopt a creed, sacrifice religion, or transform yourself into some new person. You must simply have confidence in the possibility that understanding your suffering can bring about a radical change in how you experience life. In other words, you must suspend your doubt long enough to see for yourself what you are capable of realizing. At the same time, you should not underestimate this challenge, as it demands that you voluntarily show up for dukkha with no agenda other than the knowing of it. Dancing with Life is a very personal book in that every individual suffers through his or her own life experiences in a unique way. At the same time, it is a very impersonal book in that suffering, like happiness, is a universal stream flowing through each of us. Standing in the stream, we only experience the suffering that flows around us. Our view is only through our eyes, our context. Body sensations and emotions are unique. But all humans share dukkha. Therefore, the practices of mindfulness and meditation presented here can apply to and be harnessed effectively by anyone, regardless of age, gender, religion, or national background. I feel confident that the 12 insights provide a way, not the way, mind you, but a way, into a more meaningful relationship with life. I base this judgment on my experiences over the last 37 years with my own meditation and yoga practice, as well as my experiences as a Vipassana teacher. I can honestly say that I know of no better method of reflection and practice than that contained in the Buddhist teaching of these 12 insights. Penetrating dukkha to this level spontaneously brings freedom and profound peace of mind. May this book help you to learn to dance with life, your life, just as it is. Many times this third insight is interpreted as meaning what needed to be done has been done, or in other words, that you've had the realization of that particular truth. However, this perspective is not always so helpful as you proceed along the path because it doesn't point to the practice aspect of the third insight of each truth. This is an example of how hearing the Four Noble Truths as practice requires a mind shift. Throughout this book, I use language that describes what it's like to practice the truths from an unliberated state of mind, as opposed to the perspective of a mind that has already achieved liberation. Mindfulness and compassion. Tools for transforming dukkha into joy, sukha. The Buddha taught that dukkha comes from ignorance. Ignorance, or delusion, is the one thing that with whose abandonment clear knowing arises, he said. By ignorance he meant, the word is avijja, he meant the misperceptions and delusions that your mind has about its own nature, and about nature in general, the nature of reality. In short, being ignorant of the Four Noble Truths. Thus, the way to free the mind from dukkha is through gaining insight into what truly is. Insight is a profound level of understanding that transcends mere intellectual cognition. It can only be known by experiencing it. One of the tools the Buddha taught for gaining insight is mindfulness, the ability to be fully aware in the moment. Mindfulness enables you to go beneath the surface level of moment-to-moment life experience, which is clouded with emotions, to clearly see the truth of what is happening. The untrained mind is just the opposite of mindfulness, sati. It is often described as monkey mind because it is continually distracted by one thought, emotion, or body sensation after another. The monkey mind repeatedly identifies with the surface experience and gets lost in it. The insights that arise through mindfulness release the mind from getting caught in such reactivity and can even stop the cycle from beginning. An important aspect of practicing sati is sampajanya, which translated means clear comprehension. The ability to see clearly what needs to be done, what you are capable of doing, and how it relates to the larger truth of life. Obviously, it is not easy to be mindful in such a manner, let alone experience the deep insights that lead to full liberation. But you can practice mindfulness, develop mindfulness through the practice of meditation. In this book, I use mindfulness to refer both to sati in daily life and mindfulness meditation practice. You practice realizing the 12 insights by being mindful in your daily life activities and in meditation. As your practice of the 12 insights of the Four Noble Truths matures, the two blend together and you have less and less of a sense of separation between being meditatively mindful in daily life and practicing mindfulness and meditation. Mindfulness in daily life. First, let's look at how the insight from mindfulness might manifest in daily life. Suppose someone says something that upsets you and you become angry and defensive and react by saying something you later regret. The incident ruins your day because you can't stop thinking about it. Of course, you are aware of your feelings. They have registered in your brain. But this kind of ordinary awareness, simply being conscious of your own emotional reaction to an experience, is not what the Buddha meant by sati. Mindfulness enables you to fully know your experience in each moment. So when your colleague upsets you, if you are being mindful, you can witness that her words generate thoughts and body sensations in you that lead to a strong emotion with still more body sensations. You have the insight that these feelings are being created by a chain reaction of thoughts in your mind. While this chain reaction is going on, you acknowledge how miserable it makes you feel. But instead of reacting with harsh words when you feel the impulse to speak unskillfully, you choose not to. Your mindfulness allows you not to identify with the impulses of your strong emotions or act from them. Moreover, because you witness the impersonal nature of the experience, you don't get stuck in a bad mood for the rest of the day. It is an unpleasant experience, but you are not imprisoned by it. When you are being mindful, you are aware of each experience in the body and mind, and you stay with that experience, whether it is pleasant or unpleasant, such that you see what causes stress and harm to you or another, and what does not. Mindfulness as a meditation practice. It truly is possible to experience this wise awareness in your daily life, but you need to train yourself to do so. And mindfulness meditation is the most effective means to accomplish this. Through the practice of mindfulness meditation, you develop your innate capacity to collect and unify the mind, at least temporarily, direct your attention, vitaka, sustain your attention, vichara, fully receive experience no matter how difficult, investigate the nature of experience in numerous ways, then let go of the experience or let the experience be, no matter how pleasant or unpleasant it may be. Formal meditation practice involves sitting in a chair or on a cushion in a quiet space with your eyes closed for a period of time and slowly training the mind. You can do so by simply sitting, doing nothing special, and just watching what happens, but the more common approach is to direct the mind, and the reason for this is that very often, if you're untrained, you're simply not going to be able to. You'll just be swept away. I mean, try it for yourself. This is what regular people do all the time. But the more common approach is to direct the mind by cultivating your power of attention. By being mindful, you train or condition your mind to be more mindful. It is not unlike training the body and mind to play the piano, dance the tango, speak a foreign language, or play a sport. You learn forms in order to train the mind in the same way that a pianist learns scales. You learn what to pay attention to in the same way a dancer learns to feel the music and to be aware of her body and her partners. Mindfulness meditation training begins with practicing techniques for unification, for unifying your attention with an object, unifying your being, which enables you to notice how your mind is reacting to what it is experiencing. Also puts you in the present moment so you're not just lost in thought. Unification is the ability to direct your attention and sustain it so that it becomes collected and unified, and the body and mind become collected and unified. Samadhi. It is a skill everyone already has, but for most people it is limited to only specific tasks and it is not within their control. When unification and mindfulness are combined, samadhi and sati, the power of attention is transformed into a spotlight that illuminates a particular experience in the same way that a theater spotlight holds steady on a single actor until it's time to focus the audience's attention elsewhere. You learn how to direct and sustain your attention on a single experience rather than letting the mind jump from one thought or feeling to another as it usually does. In Pali, the ability to direct attention is called vitakka, and the ability to sustain it is called vichara. The Buddha referred to these skills as factors of absorption. Traditionally, in Vipassana meditation, you use your breath initially as the object of unification to collect and unify the mind. You typically stay with the experience of the breath as it touches the body in a single spot, such as the rise or fall of the chest or the in and out movement of the belly, or the feeling of the breath in the whole body. There are many ways to follow the breath, including counting, noticing its speed, making mental notes of what is happening, using labels such as in and out or rising and falling. You can also learn to stay with the breath by coupling a word to each breath. Some teachers insist on a particular method, while others are more flexible. And if you go back to the Buddha's instructions, that's the best way. You'll find that he doesn't specify the area of breathing in that manner. Silent residential meditation retreats, which are the best way to learn mindfulness meditation, even for those who have already have other meditation practices. At first, you won't be able to stay with the breath, but soon you will be at least able to be with one or two breaths throughout the complete cycle of inhalation and exhalation. And indeed, a good way to practice is one half breath at a time. You will also develop the ability to notice when your mind has wandered, and to firmly yet gently bring it back to the breath. When your mind starts wandering, the breath becomes your anchor to which you return in order to stabilize and focus your attention. This anchor object is important. You may get distracted by what's worrying you, by some longing, or you may get bored, sleepy, or restless. Staying with the breath calms the mind, collects your scattered attention, and unifies the mind so that you are able to continue. It is never a mistake or a bad meditation if all you do is work on staying with the breath. Even when you constantly struggle and don't actually spend much time with the breath, it's good practice. By repeatedly returning to the breath, you are learning to just start over. Starting over is a key step in meditation. It expresses your intention to be present, and the power of your intention is what determines your ability to be mindful in daily life. The manner in which you stay with the breath in meditation is called bare attention. You simply feel the movement of the breath and the body's response and notice different qualities. You observe the rising of a breath, its duration, and its passing. You might stay with only one of these experiences or a combination of them. In practicing bare attention, you don't judge the breath or think about how you might improve it. You simply register the experience of the breath without reacting to the experience with mental commentary or physical action. Moving beyond the breath in meditation. Once you're somewhat able to stay present with the breath, you start to open your field of attention to ever more subtle objects of experience that arise in the mind. This process continues until you are able to respond to all of your experiences as opportunities for mindfulness. In order to meditate in this manner, the Buddha taught what are often called the four foundations of mindfulness, or the four establishments of mindfulness, in which you systematically learn how to pay attention to and investigate what arises in your mind, whether the experience comes from one of your five body senses or from the mind-generating thought. The four modes of investigation he prescribed are knowing how any experience feels in the body, first foundation, noting the pleasant, unpleasant, or neither feeling tone that accompanies every moment's experience, second foundation, witnessing your mental state and your emotions in the moment, third foundation. And finally, opening to the impersonal truth of life that is revealed in this moment, fourth foundation. These four establishments of mindfulness and all the practices associated with them are described in depth in the Buddha Satipatthana Sutta. By building your awareness utilizing these four establishments, you gradually develop clear seeing, sampajanya, the ability to be mindful in the present moment. In so doing, you begin to have insight about what is true and how to respond skillfully. When you are just beginning this practice, you serially investigate all four foundations of mindfulness. For instance, if the mind is pulled away from the breath by a strong body sensation, then you temporarily abandon the breath as an object and let that body sensation become the object of your attention. When the mind gets tired of staying with the body sensations and starts to move to other objects, return to the breath. At this stage of practice, you do not investigate your emotions or mind states, only body sensations. The challenge is to sustain your attention on a particular body sensation in such a way that you can feel it. Is it pulsating or a wave? Is it expanding or contracting? If it's pleasant, is it sweet, warm, tingly? In the first foundation of mindfulness, the attention is to be focused on the body from within the body, meaning that you are not training your mind to be a distant, indifferent observer of your body. This same method of keeping attention within the experience is used for all four establishments of mindfulness. The Buddha started Vipassana practice with mindfulness of the body because for most people it is far easier to stay present with the body than with the mind, and because the body participates in all other experiences you have. He said, if the body is not mastered by meditation, then the mind cannot be mastered. If the body is mastered, mind is mastered. He went on to say, there is one thing, bhikkhus, that cultivated and regularly practiced leads to a deep sense of urgency, to the supreme peace, to mindfulness and clear comprehension, to the attainment of right vision and knowledge, to happiness here and now, to realizing deliverance by wisdom and the fruition of holiness. It is mindfulness of the body. Many experienced students of meditation tend to skip over the body and focus on the emotions and mind states, thinking they are getting to the really juicy part of practice. But as the Buddha's quote indicates, this is a significant misapprehension. Throughout this book, I will encourage you to develop an almost continual awareness of your ever-changing body experience. I have found that cultivating this body awareness is the surest way for most students to start to impact their daily life with their mindfulness practice. Therefore, as you move from the first establishment of mindfulness of the body to the second establishment, remember that throughout the practice, you use the breath as an anchor to collect and unify the mind while expanding your mindfulness to an ever greater range of experience. After you develop mindfulness of the changing nature of bodily experience, you are ready to work with the second foundation, the feeling tone of your experience. You start to include the pleasant, unpleasant, or neither neutral flavor contained in each moment of body sensation in your field of attention. You don't try to control these sensations, but simply to know them. For instance, you notice how pleasant the warm sun feels on your face on winter mornings, or how an aching leg feels unpleasant from within the experience. When body sensations are neither pleasant or unpleasant, they are neutral. Ordinarily, you don't really notice neutral sensations, but with mindfulness, they become part of your awareness and expand your experience of being alive. Developing awareness of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral sensations and how they condition the mind is a critical factor in finding peace and well-being in your life. After you have worked with body sensations, you are ready to work with the third foundation, mental events, your emotions, mental processes, and mind states in your meditation. At first, just take emotions as a field for investigation. Notice when your mind is pulled away from the breath by an emotion. What is the nature of the emotion? How do you feel it in the body? In my experience, all emotions are accompanied by bodily sensations. What is an emotion, really, when you deconstruct it? Is it not an internal image or words or a pleasant or unpleasant feeling accompanied by many coarse or subtle sensations? I'm not referring to what caused the emotion, which is a combination of perception, belief, intent, and reaction, but rather to what happens when the mind registers an emotion. Does the mind keep feeling the emotion, or does it arise and pass like a body sensation? Remember to continue to use your anchor object so that you don't get lost in your emotions. Many times you will discover that you don't know what emotion you are feeling, or that there is more than one emotion competing for attention. In these instances, just be aware of emotions. Do not try to name them. Likewise, sometimes you can't name a body sensation, so it only feels like numbness. Numbness then is the body sensation. Don't insist on specificity. Just be aware that there is a body. Atikayo.